And good morning and welcome to a Red River Radio Spotlight. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director for Red River Radio. And beginning tonight at 7:30 at the East Bank Theater in Bossier City for four performances only, the River City Repertory Theater presents Silent Witnesses, featuring Stephanie Satie and directed by Anita Kanzadian. And joining me in our Knoll Foundation studios this morning are Stephanie Satie, who will play the four roles in this story, along with Patrick McWilliams, the artistic director for River City Repertory Theater, to discuss this poignant and powerful story with us. Stephanie and Patrick, thanks for coming in this morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Stephanie, let's begin. You co-wrote this play with Anita. And how did you two come together and decide, one, to create this story and tell this story? And what is it that created, you know, or initiated, I guess, this creative outburst on your part? What was it that drew you to this concept?
Well, I was invited to do a fundraiser for an organization that I'd never heard of called Child Survivors of the Holocaust. They're younger than the camp survivors. And I did a different one-person show. And during the Q&A, I noticed that so many of them, I had been told they were social workers, psychologists, so many of them were beautiful. Most of them were women. They were just beautiful. And I made some remark about that, and one woman said, "Well, nobody saves the ugly puppies." And I thought, oh my God, there's something here. And then she said, "Why don't you do our stories?" And that was it. I started interviewing people a week later and gathering the stories, and I, you know, wrote things down, and I recorded them, and we met in gardens and kitchens and cafes, but that was the beginning of it.
So although these four women in the story are fictional characters, they are drawn upon real life experiences?
They're not all fictional.
Oh, they're not all
no.
fictional.
Two of them are composites. Two of them are completely as they said to me. I had to condense it, of course, or we'd have the Mahabharata. But they are their stories, pared down.
Well, let's go into a brief synopsis, if you could. Could you let me know about who each of these women are and what their experience was and how that comes together in this play?
Yeah. Well, three of them were hidden. They were hidden on the outside. They never saw a camp. They were just beneath everyone's radar, and also therefore considered insignificant even by camp survivors. So one of them was hidden with four different families in Belgium. That's Amelie. Hannah was hidden with a family in Amsterdam that already had two kids, and Holland was just being starved by Hitler, so they barely made it. But she could never leave the house. She couldn't even stand by the windows. And Dana was hidden with her mother. They were in the ghetto for a while in Lvov, and hidden with her mother in a very small rural village in Poland. And Paula was in the ghetto, hiding in the woods all by herself, in a work camp with her mother, and finally in Auschwitz. And then, after that, spent 6 years in a DP camp with her mother before emigrating to America.
Can you give us a little bit of, I guess, psychological persona of each of these characters and what makes them up? Let's start with Paula.
Well, Paula remembers everything. She's very tough. Her eyes had to be opened all the time because, you know, like some small insect, she could be crushed in a minute. She was very outspoken. She saw everything. Didn't have the words when she saw it because she was so young. And then once she had the words, she found that nobody wanted to hear them. And she had to spend a life being invisible as much as possible. And once she emigrated to the United States, she no longer wanted to be invisible. And they wanted her to be invisible because they wanted her to just quietly assimilate and not dwell on the past. Right. How do you make people do that?
And let's go into Amelie, if we could.
She was born in Poland, but she doesn't remember Poland. She doesn't remember her mother or her father. She just remembers the four families that were very kind to her in Belgium. No Jewish kids died in Belgium that were hidden. And right after the war, her aunt, that she doesn't even remember because she doesn't remember her parents, came for her and sort of took her away to live in Italy with her new husband, and she was not an easy woman. She was maybe, according to her, a little mentally unbalanced. And she didn't come. She came the last. She didn't come to America until she was 42 years old.
And let's go on to Hannah.
And Hannah hardly remembered anything. Even when I met her, she said to me, "Well, you know, I don't remember anything, so why do you want to talk to me?" Gradually, by telling and telling this group, she began to remember things. But she had sort of blocked it out. When she was no longer allowed out of the house, it was like the world was outside on the other side of that window. She was inside, and the world came to a standstill. Dana remembers everything. She's a hugely articulate spokesperson. She goes all over the world. She's done probably more interviews for the Shoah Foundation than anybody. And she's become a friend of my heart.
One of the difficulties for a one-woman show playing four characters is to theatrically create those cues that the audience can pick up on. Oh, we're with a different character. Can you talk about some of those triggering cues for each of these characters? So yeah. That's how we know we've transited from Amelie to Hannah to Dana and on?
Well, there's a few things. First of all, there's the immediate change of accent. So that we know. There's also, I use very few props, a scarf that changes. Amelie can never get warm, so Amelie bundles up the minute she speaks. Hannah has, in my mind, a much bigger body than I have, a much longer body. So she literally grows, and the accent changes. Dana is a little closer to me in some ways. She's the therapist, so she's the central figure. And Paula has this wild sense of humor, sort of ghetto humor. So she has a definite change of voice. I gave Paula a stronger Yiddish accent than she really has in life because I needed for the differentiation. But I really must say that my director, Anita Kanzadian, is a genius about switching. It's a body change. It's an accent change. She really makes those differentiations clear.
So really turning you into a chameleon in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
The color changes. And there's also the use, although this is a spare set for those, you know, thinking they're going to go and see an elaborate set. Mm-hmm. Part of the set design in this is literally to kind of highlight the bleakness and the sparseness of the life that they came from. And also you're using a lot of lighting cues in this as well. Mm-hmm. Can you give us an idea of the lighting cues that will trigger us to know that we're in the various characters?
You know, I know that for simple things, as I shift from one area of the stage to another, whether it's in the office, you know, the meeting room, or this neutral space where I talk to the larger audience, the lights shift. And there's one cue that I just love, and we don't always get it, is when Paula sees her mother. She's been hiding in the woods, and she sees her mother, and I run to her. And that light sort of freezes me like a deer in the headlights. And it gives you the sense that we're in the woods. And they're narrating in, you know, as adults, but they're coming from that child place of memory where they remember as a child, even though it's infused with the sensibility that they've gained as adults.
Now, Anita has some background, not with the German Holocaust, but with the Armenian Holocaust. Can you give us a little bit of her background and what she brings to this and understanding?
Yeah, Anita's older, and Anita was a child, but her mother was twice orphaned, once in, I believe, the 1905 Armenian Genocide, and where she was sent to live with a Turkish family, came back as a child, not speaking a word of Armenian, and then either 1910 or 1915, again, where her mother died. And then Anita's mother was sent to live in a house in Alexandria and worked for the family, and the family liked her, and they kind of got her married to their brother who was living in America. But Anita, you know, grew up in that Armenian kitchen, and her mother told her she wasn't hiding anything. She told her all the stories that she had been told.
Okay. And ultimately, a play like this is not so much about reliving the trauma, but about liberating oneself from the trauma. Can you tell us how each of these characters becomes a little freer from the past to live, you know, a useful, normal, mm-hmm. and deliciously beautiful life. Okay, what is the transformation for each of these characters?
I think it's in the telling, because prior to them finding each other, they didn't really talk about this to anyone, and the camp survivors really didn't want to hear anything from them because they figured they were kids, nothing really happened to them. So they were off everybody's radar. They were not even recognizable to each other. So once they found each other and they were able to tell, you know, I was born here, I was taken away on a bicycle, or I was doing this, or I was doing that, suddenly they realize that while each individual story is very specific and individual, that there's a universality to this, and they form a huge kinship and friendship, but they're able to move on. And that's why it's an uplifting piece rather than just a maudlin one. And also, they were not, except for Paula, but she was hidden in the camp, they were not in the camps. They just had to keep a very low profile and be kind of, well, not totally invisible, because they were living in a town, but right. really off everyone's radar.
And yet, at the same time, it's still living with constant terror.
Oh, yeah, and absolutely. And they saw other people disappearing right. in the town. And Paula's father died. They all lose major family members, and they don't know during the war, are they hidden? Are they escaping? They don't know. Mm-hmm. And once the war is over, they're sort of stunned. They, you know, everybody's rejoicing. Oh, it's over. Let's go on with life. And they're at sea. They're mm-hmm. marooned.
Patrick, how did you come about finding this play and deciding to bring it in for the River City Rep?
Well, it's part of a sort of goal series that we've been trying to do. We did 8, the play about Proposition 8
right.
last season. We brought in an actor from Phoenix to do Dodging Bullets. And it's a style that people here really haven't been exposed to a lot. That one man, one woman show, lots of characters, etc. So we're trying to do that and also bring in things that deal with topics that may be a little rough sometimes to take, but ultimately all of these properties are ending up being very uplifting and mm-hmm. sort of life-affirming. So it's kind of a continuing quest for us. How this all came about is, oh gosh, the circuitous way it all happens, but I have really great good friends in New York, some of my best friends, who are great good friends with Stephanie, and we think we met a long time ago, very briefly, but she came to New York recently to do it, and they saw it and then began to encourage me to look into it, and that they thought it would be a perfect fit for what we were doing. And so we lassoed her from Los Angeles and brought her in to do this, and very excited about it.
All right. And this is a fundraiser for River City Rep, is it not?
It is, although it's really basically a production,
right.
but we try to stick in things like this throughout the year in the little pockets between the major productions that will create revenue for us, because like all nonprofits, it's the grind. But we like to do things that we're actually about it for our fundraisers.
So give us some information. The show times are?
They are at 7:30 Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And the Sunday matinee, which is the 26th, is at 3 o'clock. They can get tickets, make reservations by calling 318-868-5888. On opening night, we will have our standard reception after the show, wine and, you know, food and things like that, so that audience members that are interested can meet with Stephanie. And although I haven't thrown this at her yet, we have some school groups that are amassing to come in to see it, and I'm hoping we can twist her arm to do some Q&A after the performances with some of these students.
I'm so happy to do that.
Great.
All right. So, all right. Anything else you'd like to share for the audience?
I just would love for them to come out and see it and realize that there's humor in it and that it's uplifting and it's not this dark dirge that some people might think it is.
Patrick and Stephanie, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
That was Stephanie Sautee, the star of Silent Witness, along with Patrick McWilliams, the artistic director for River City Repertory Theater. They join me in our Knoll Foundation studios today to talk about Silent Witnesses, a one-woman play that opens up tonight at 7:30 at the East Bank Theater in Bossier City. If you'd like more information, you can contact River City Repertory Theater at 318-868-5888, or you can go online at rivercityrep.org. This has been a Red River Radio Spotlight, and for Red River Radio, I'm Bill Beckett.